Welcome to Parle, the Hindu's weekly podcast. I'm R. Prasad, science editor of the Hindu newspaper, host for today's podcast. I have with me Dr. Sachidita Rath, an immunologist, formerly with the National Institute of Immunology, and Dr. Chandrakant Lagaria, a physician epidemiologist and a vaccine expert. Today's discussion is on booster doses, whether it is needed, and who should it be given to, and when. In this regard, do we really know the main purpose of a booster shot? Is it to prevent symptomatic infection or to prevent moderate or severe disease? Dr. Rath, would you like to take that question first?
Sure, Prasad. Thank you. Before addressing that question, let me raise what I suspect is going to be an elephant in the room for this entire discussion. Are we talking about the purpose of vaccination with outcomes at the community level? Or are we talking about the outcomes of vaccination in terms of protection at the individual level? And this is going to remain a point with any discussion about this entire booster-related issue, I think. That said, I think that if we think about evidence, the evidence so far is that severe illness, hospitalization, and death are far more efficiently protected against by all COVID vaccines than actual infection and transmission are. But that does not mean that infection and transmission are not protected against, simply that they are somewhat less well protected against. The expectation from boosters is that boosters will proportionately increase protection for both of these. However, the evidence actually for booster doses doing this is so far available in fragmentary ways, and such as it is, it remains primarily focused on severe illness and death reduction, not so much on prevention of infection and transmission. But Dr. Lagaria may have more information on that.
Dr. Lagaria?
Thank you, Dr. Rath. I would approach this in a different way. We know that boosters are being considered globally for a different set of population. And when we think of what is the purpose of booster, then we have to go back to the purpose of immunization program against COVID-19. And the purpose of COVID-19 vaccination is to reduce hospitalization, severe disease, and death. And that's the purpose of COVID-19 vaccination. Now, that purpose or goal of COVID-19 vaccination can be achieved through administering primary schedule and then booster dose. So the booster itself does not have a separate purpose. In my opinion, booster is intended to fulfill the overall objective of COVID-19 vaccination program. And that remains the same. So the key point here is to remember is that COVID-19 vaccination is being done to reduce hospitalization, severe disease, and death. Current approach to achieve that is that one or two primary shots, depending upon which vaccine it is. Now, when the discussion regarding booster comes, we really do not know that giving the booster shot actually add any value to the primary purpose or the core purpose of immunization, of hospitalization, severe disease, and death. We really, till now, don't have any additional information that giving the booster will help in reducing hospitalization, disease, and death. When it comes to the reducing symptomatic disease, other things, considering that is not the primary purpose of ongoing COVID-19 vaccination. So unless the purpose of COVID-19 vaccination itself is changed, that cannot be purpose of COVID-19 booster doses.
While mentioning about the idea of effectiveness and other things, do we really know how effective the Covaxin and Covishield are in preventing both symptomatic infection and severe diseases? Because we just have one study on Covishield and one study on Covaxin, and both these are small studies. And in the case of Covishield, they looked at both symptomatic infection as well as severe disease and death. But in the case of Covishield, they looked at, but in the case of Covaxin, they just looked at the symptomatic infection alone. So do we really have evidence on the effectiveness of these vaccines and therefore the need for a booster dose? Dr. Lagadia, would you like to answer that first?
Yeah, so thank you. The key thing to remember is that most of these vaccines currently used, COVID-19 vaccines, and as we know, as it happens in clinical trials, are assessed for efficacy in a particular setting. But when it comes to real-life effectiveness in different settings, the studies are far and scarce. For Covaxin, one of the studies which recently came out say that 50% effectiveness in a particular setting in healthcare workers at the peak period of ongoing wave. So definitely this is a challenging issue when we are going to decide on booster. But let's think in a different approach, because we know there are studies and evidence which indicate that while the antibody level goes down over a period of time, but the protection against the severe disease, hospitalization, death remain unchanged. So we really do not know if, unless we change the purpose of vaccination program, which is to reduce symptomatic disease or other approaches, the need for booster is not going to be altered. Other aspect is that there is another study on effectiveness of, there are few published studies on the effectiveness of Covishield, the Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine, especially for UK setting. But unless we are going to change, I would repeat the point, unless we are going to change the purpose of objective of COVID-19 vaccination, the utility or usefulness of these effectiveness studies is limited, because what we know that the effectiveness or effectiveness against the primary purpose remains the same. So, I'll stop here.
Dr. Rath, would you like to add to it?
Well, really, Dr. Larry makes an excellent point. All I will add is that the evidence for protection by the primary schedule of vaccination, the two-dose schedule of vaccination, in achieving quite substantial protection against severe illness, hospitalizations and deaths in clinical trials is reasonable. In real-life effectiveness studies, there are indications, and while one can debate endlessly on just how much evidence is enough evidence, I don't have any difficulty in accepting that both Covishield and Covaxin provide a significant measure of protection against severe illness and death. And we do not as yet, as far as I can tell, have really reliable evidence about infection and transmission and mild or asymptomatic disease. But all of that said, as Dr. Lahiria points out, none of that tells us anything in terms of evidentiary basis for how to decide about a booster dose. Because if we are looking for protection against hospitalization and death, then we already have a vaccination campaign that in the first place is not complete. And in the second place, where it has been administered, we have every expectation that it's going to be effective. So I'm not quite certain of what either the evidentiary or the tactical basis for discussing booster dose inclusion in a vaccination campaign is.
Dr. Rath, I sort of disagree to some extent, or would you, if you could clarify, should we not actually have the effectiveness data before we decide either way, be it for severe disease or death, or for symptomatic in preventing symptomatic infection or anything? Should we not have actual effectiveness data? Because we have crossed 1.26 billion doses already. And this program has been going on for about 11 months now. So we have enough number of people vaccinated and for a long duration of time. By this time, we should have had several such studies done, which should have helped us to decide one way or the other about booster doses.
Certainly, we need more effectiveness data. As I pointed out, the effectiveness data still remains small scale and fragmentary. So far as they are available, they seem to support the original clinical efficacy data as far as hospitalization and death is concerned. As far as transmission and mild to asymptomatic disease is concerned, the picture is far more uncertain. But the point, and I suspect Dr. Lehria will agree, the point about this is, even if we have data about the effectiveness of the primary two-dose schedule of either Covishield or Covaxin in preventing hospitalization and death, how does that tell us whether boosters will work or not? Even if it turns out that we don't have efficient, robust, reasonable protection in real life circumstances against hospitalization and death by these two dose schedules of the vaccines, that doesn't automatically tell us that the booster is going to work, does it? It doesn't provide us evidence that a booster is going to work. And that, I think, is simply an extension of the point that Dr. Lehria has been making. Am I being reasonable, Dr. Lehria?
I largely agree with you. So let's think in another approach, that what we need to remember that the effect, real life effectiveness remain unchanged over a period of time against the primary target of severe disease, hospitalization and death. When it comes to effectiveness against milder illness or symptomatic illness, it is definitely going to be lower than. And it is, that's what we have seen in various studies, that it is far lower. But the bigger point when deciding about the booster is that where are we drawing the cutoff for saying that this much protection effectiveness is enough, and that's what we want to achieve. Now, let's take an example that when we are talking about the giving primary immunization and booster, we know that different vaccines provide different level of, different vaccines have a different level of efficacy in clinical trials. And effectiveness has been found slightly lower, but somewhere around that range. Now, take an example of mRNA-based vaccine, which are around 95% efficacy. And with the period of time, if the protection declined, what we know that it can come down to 80%, 70%. But for some other vaccines, the efficacy itself is 79% or 76%. For them, the effectiveness will decline over a period of time to 60 or so. So it will go down with the period of time or different settings. If you want to administer booster dose, then we really need to draw a line that if a particular country, for example, a country, United States or other country, which is using mRNA-based vaccine, over a period of time effectiveness, we find on this study, let's say, that 80%. Should we give a booster dose to boost that from 80% to 95% again, or should we wait for 70%? What the other countries, which are using a lower efficacy vaccine, when should they give a booster? And that those are the going to be the key question. But another point is that how do we arrive on this or this number, that this is a what level of effect, benefit or protection we want to achieve through the booster? So, and final point here, I would like to make that even if we know effectiveness and this thing, do we have data for these vaccines or different vaccines that giving actually a booster shot will result in improved protection? This is an assumption, and there is some data on Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine about this thing, that giving booster will result in improved effectiveness or improved protection, so to say. But we don't have that kind of data for other vaccines. So what is, while all of these studies should be done, these studies should be analyzed and interpreted in combination of with other factors, and then only a decision can be made.
Okay. Dr. Rath, coming to the next issue, does the emergence of this new variant, Omicron, does it have increased transmissibility, but sort of unknown severity in different age groups, does it make the demand for a booster dose even more sharper now?
Let me put it this way. The Omicron variant emergence makes the case for a global inclusive primary vaccination campaign for COVID-19 even more compelling than it already was. does it separately make a specific case for a booster dose program more compelling? I don't think so, for all the reasons that Dr. Lahiri and I have been discussing so far. And that's because all of these are proportionate issues. Transmission increases, so clearly protection provided by any vaccine dosage, whether primary vaccination schedule or a booster, is going to be proportionately lower. You're going to have, therefore, a little more transmission, a little more hospitalization, but protection against that is likely to be higher. Both Dr. Lahiri and I point out repeatedly that for booster doses, actual real evidence for their efficacy in protection is quite scarce. So even if we think about boosters, we would be thinking in somewhat evidence-free or evidence-thin fashion. And if we think in purely conceptual terms, what the Omicron variant does is make the case for primary global inclusive vaccination more compelling. Rather than specifically increasing the pressure to begin to plan for boosters.
Dr. Lagaria, would you like to add to it?
What we know that role of currently available vaccine reducing transmission is very limited, if at all, and we don't have a quantified number for that. Far better approach to reduce transmission is following COVID-appropriate behavior rather than thinking of vaccines as of now. Second part is that we also know with the currently available data till now that Omicron caused mostly mild disease. Now, we have to know that currently licensed vaccines have a proven role in reducing severe disease, hospitalization, and death. So there is a definitely clear disconnect that these vaccines would have any, like because of Omicron, there would be any additional advantage in reducing any kind of illness. As Dr. Rath correctly pointed out, the focus had to be on ensuring that everyone receive primary schedule. There is no additional value and point in administering booster because of Omicron variant. Of course, booster dose discussion should continue in the broader context, but not because of Omicron variant as of now. We also know, and this is an important point, that while there have been many, at least four variants of concern till now, and Omicron is fifth one. There has always been a discussion that with the emergence of variant, there would be some immune escape or effectiveness will go down. But we know that vaccine continue to be effective in preventing, though it may go down by a few percentage point, but that is not the reason enough to consider or think of a booster shot.
And taking Dr. Rath's point about increasing the primary vaccination globally, now, at least in the case of India, only 85% have still received the first dose. And in the case of the second dose or the full vaccination, it's just above 51%. And in many priority groups, including healthcare workers, there's a sizable percentage of people who have not got fully vaccinated. Under these circumstances, should the focus be on increasing the first and second dose coverage in India than on boosters at all? Dr. Rath?
Well, the short answer to that I would give is yes. But let me point out that the argument, the broad thrust of the argument that both Dr. Lahiri and I have been making throughout this conversation is that the logic of the booster dose strategy as part of a COVID vaccination campaign itself remains quite unclear. So it's not simply a matter of, oh, booster doses would be an unalloyed good. Of course, they make sense. Of course, there is evidence for them. But because we have not achieved primary coverage, we have to put booster doses on the back burner. Even that is not clear as far as I can tell. So the short answer, of course, is yes. We should have universal, I would insist on global, inclusive primary vaccination coverage. But it's not because primary vaccination coverage is inadequate that we should be put thinking carefully and cautiously about booster doses. It's for both the purpose and the evidence related to the booster doses themselves and the uncertainties in both of them that we should be thinking carefully about them.
Yeah, exactly. So what should be done? Like, our immediate focus had to be on achieving as high as possible primary immunization schedule, especially ensuring that high-risk vulnerable group, 60-plus population, receive both shots. It is more than 9 months since when vaccination for this age group started, but still a chunk, sizable chunk, is either partially vaccinated or not vaccinated at all. Similarly, for 45 to 59 year with comorbidity, the vaccination coverage need to be increased. So primary immunization undoubtedly should be the focus and priority for India. Alongside, it's important that we keep thinking about booster dose. And I personally think that there are many scientific questions which need to be answered before a decision on that should be made. So what should be done now, that those questions which we need answers in the future to decide about booster shot should be identified, the required mechanism should be in place to analyze the data, collect data, have deliberation with the experts to arrive on the solution. So those two streams should continue in parallel, but with different purposes. Primary immunization, focus on operationalization, increasing coverage. Booster dose, scientific inquiry and asking those questions and conducting research. So we have answer to those questions a few months down, a few weeks or months down the lane to make decision as and when required.
What about vaccinating at least the adolescents even before we start discussing about booster doses? Is it high time that we start thinking seriously about vaccinating the adolescent population? Dr. Chandan Lagaria, would you like to take that?
I think this is the government is already in the process of deciding on this. But what we need to remember that for long, the global experts and then even within India, the priority has already been categorically identified that adolescent comes in a particular order of priority after the frontline worker, health workers, then elderly population, then adult population with comorbidity, then adult population without comorbidity, and then adolescent population should be considered. That's where the priority is. So definitely there would be a time when vaccination of identified adolescent age group or 12 to 17 years need to be started. But we also need to remember that vaccination program or immunization program are outcome of vaccine availability and rolling out and technical decision making. But we need to remember that in India, the majority of a major vaccine which is being used for adult immunization program is not licensed for use in adolescent. There is one vaccine which has been licensed for 12 to 17 years, but it is yet to be rolled out. So essentially, first a vaccine should be available and launched in the market, and then only that decision would be started. Second, there is a near consensus that all adolescent or all children between 12 to 17 years, all healthy children between 12 to 17 years may not need a vaccine, COVID-19 vaccine. So that prioritization exercise is also being considered, and that is the right approach. Most likely, children in 12 to 17 years with comorbidity should be prioritized for COVID-19 vaccination before expanding to additional children in this age group. But that is something which I foresee would happen in coming days or weeks.
Dr. Rath?
Well, I broadly agree with Dr. Lahiri about this. The only thing I would add, and I'm beginning to sound quite repetitive, but I will add it nonetheless, that vaccinating adolescents with all its cautions, its caveats, and the prioritizations that Dr. Lahiri laid out is more evidence-based than discussions of booster shots are. So again, when in such a question, we sort of posit adolescent vaccination strategy versus booster shot strategy, we need to keep that core difference in mind.
Well, even if booster doses are approved for certain categories of people, immaterial of the effectiveness data or other reasons, who do you think should be eligible for a booster dose, if at all? Any particular category of people, like, say, immunocompromised people, or older people, people above 60 years, or those with comorbidities, who do you think should be eligible to receive the booster dose first? Dr. Rath?
Well, you know, we don't have evidence. We keep coming back to this again and again. We really don't have good evidence. So, for example, there is evidence that booster doses do increase antibody levels. But do they increase antibody levels in specifically immunocompromised individuals who have not responded well or have not responded for long duration to the first primary two-dose schedule? We don't have really robust evidence for that category. So when we begin to discuss whether boosters should be approved for certain categories of people, do we have evidence that even for the simple readout of increased antibody levels, do boosters actually work in those categories? And the short answer is, we don't have evidences yet. So on what grounds can we make an evidence-based decision about this? In sort of hand-waving common sense terms, of course it would be nice if we had proper universal primary immunization coverage achieved, and if vaccine supplies were available and approved, as Dr. Laria points out, it would be nice to have boosters available for identified categories of particularly vulnerable people. But none of the conditionalities for that, neither the supply conditionalities nor the primary vaccination campaign success conditionality, nor the conditionality of evidence for boosters working in these categories of people, are being currently fulfilled as far as I can tell.
Dr. Lagrange?
Yeah. Yes, so these are two parts. One, that let's go back to the same thing, that when and how a decision on a booster dose need to be made. And there are a few criteria which have already broadly been laid down. For example, first thing need to be done, assess the need for booster dose. And that need can be assessed based upon what is the pattern of breakthrough case infections, or which population group over a period of time is reporting more severe disease, are those old elderly people, comorbidity. So we definitely need more data. And this would also vary by the type of vaccine used, which type of vaccine given. So we need more granular data on epidemiology, disease burden, breakthrough infection before we identify a group. And same is true for vaccine-specific data, like not only the population data, but vaccine data, that how protection, efficacy, effectiveness, duration of protection, other aspects are there. That's one part. Second set of data we need to know before we go, that we give booster dose, performance of booster doses. And I am not sure the vaccines which are being used in India, have those vaccines been studied, or at least not to my knowledge, that how it perform when a booster dose is given to different set of population. It's not necessary that the protection will be very similar in each age group, but we need to know about that. Third aspect to include in the decision on the booster is that what should be the optimal timing, 6 months, 9 months, a year, whether homologous or heterologous booster, because majority of other countries are giving booster dose of vaccines, either different vaccine on the same platform or vaccines on completely different platform. So those aspects need to be explored. We also need to explore whether booster dose should be of the same amount of vaccine or a dose sparing formulation. So there are these three aspects which need to be considered. Then when it comes to which age group should be prioritized, I think that will be depending upon all of this data, but most likely, considering one of the key factors has always been the duration between the primary completion of primary immunization schedule and then the gap between the primary schedule and the planned booster. So by that standard, if you look at Indian example, of course, health workers and frontline workers who receive vaccine along before anyone might come in that category, that they should receive booster dose before other group, subgroup. Then also, of course, elderly also started early, but also we know that elderly may require a far more boosting. So the approach is likely to be very similar what had been adopted for different age group, informed by the data. But I also want to bring the final, the slightly related point, which had not been asked but still relevant, that there is a ongoing discussion and broad consensus that while booster dose require more thinking, but additional dose, or third dose for as part of the extended primary immunization schedule for those individuals who are immunocompromised or who could not develop sufficient antibody after two shots of primary schedule should be considered, and that can be considered for a like, of course, immunocompromised individual in irrespective of which age group in adult population they are. That is, there is a broad consensus, and that can be considered even before booster shot in India.
Before Dr. Rath can answer this, can I ask a supplementary question? Do we have those kind of effectiveness data, be it a third dose for immunocompromised people or even the effectiveness of the primary vaccination to decide whether to give it or not? So which is a question that I asked initially. Do we have any data on these kind of questions?
So yes, so the data on third dose, third dose effectiveness of third dose is available for only one type of vaccine, and that is mRNA based vaccine, that giving two primary vaccine shot if there is a less antibody, but if you give the third shot, it results in a far improved antibody level in immunocompromised individual. However, such similar data is not available for other vaccines, such as the vaccines which are available in India, Covishield, Covaxin. We really do not know whether those individuals who did not develop sufficient antibody after first shoot two shots with the Covishield or Covaxin, whether they would have a improved level of antibody with third shot. That require more studies, but we can, to start with, it can be assumed, and alongside it can be some work may be started on this, but not enough data is available. Sufficient data is not available for all the vaccines, but some vaccines.
Dr. Rath, could you answer both these questions?
While I agree with Dr. Laria, let me add what might seem like a quibble about the data, but I think it's an important point to make, which is all immunocompromised individuals are not similarly immunocompromised. It depends on what the reason, what the biological basis of the immunocompromised state is. Is the immunocompromising because of chronic HIV infection? Is the immunocompromising because of medication for controlling autoimmune diseases such as rheumatoid arthritis or systemic lupus? Is the immunocompromising because of simply elderliness, extreme elderliness? Each one of these, because the mechanisms involved in the compromising of immune responses are different, might well respond quite differently to boosters. So this general categorization of the immunocompromised, I think, is obscuring important distinctions involved in this, which makes the point that Dr. Laria makes about the paucity of data, the lack of data, even more glaring.
And what should be the ideal gap, if at all a decision is taken on administering a booster dose? What should be the ideal gap between the second dose and the booster shot? And will that be different for Covishield and Covaxin? Dr. Rath?
I think Dr. Laria would be better placed to provide a definitive response to this.
So in my understanding, thanks, Dr. Rath, in my understanding, to call any additional shot booster shot, there had to be at least 6 months interval between the primary completed primary immunization and booster shot and the subsequent shot. So 6 months is a minimum interval which is recommended. Now, other dimension is that, of course, it is determined based upon various other scientific epidemiological parameters. So what we know till currently, that vaccines provide reasonable protection through different mechanisms of cellular an cellular antibody or other antibody, cellular response, or other antibody. So usually 9 to 12 months is what can be allowed, and that point a booster can be considered. So we don't have an answer, and that's what the scientific study should be examined. But in short, 6 months is minimum. Current evidence indicate that for COVID-19 vaccines, a 12-month gap might be appropriate, but it could be even longer because we do not have that kind of answer till that many months passage before the start of since the completion of primary schedule, and then we get a sense of it whether it is still continuing to provide protection or not. But there are a few more dimensions. One other dimension is that in a normal circumstances, this would have been followed. But we really do not know that when vaccination has started and there is something like a second wave in India, where people were exposed. So in a setting where there is a high exposure, ongoing exposure, what should be the optimal gap? 6 months minimum, 12 months is realistic, but it could really be longer in my opinion. And that can only be answered by scientific and epidemiological study.
Should we be boosting with the same vaccine that the person has received, that is the homologous booster shot, or using a different vaccine to boost? Which approach would be better, and should we do? Will this require more studies to know the difference between boosting using the same vaccine or a different vaccine? Dr. Lagaria, would you like to answer that?
So part of this answer to this question has come from the studies which have been done in different parts of the world, homologous and heterologous prime boost approach, where essentially they also have studied what happens when first and second shot of primary immunization schedule is given with the different vaccines, and also a booster shot studies have been done. So what we know in summary, that if the same vaccine is used for subsequent vaccination or a booster shot, there is increase in the level of antibody. However, when a different vaccine is used for a subsequent dose or a booster, the amount of antibody generated are many, many fold higher than when the homologous approach is followed. Now, if the purpose of a vaccination program is so before that, a caveat is that we really do not know if more antibody means better protection or not. But of course, the assumption is that if more antibodies are there, the decline in the antibody will be slower. So the protection could last longer, but we cannot answer. So in a setting where the vaccines are limited, and if world want to decide on administering boosters based upon scientific evidence, the better approach would be to give a heterologous booster, which essentially means giving a different vaccine for a booster dose. And that is what most of the countries which have started on booster dose are doing. In the United States, do the same platform, but people are allowed to go for a different vaccine even on the same platform. More specifically for India, India's major vaccine is Covishield, around 88% of total population. And other country which is using the same vaccine, Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, is United Kingdom. And when United Kingdom has started giving booster shot, it has opted for a mRNA-based vaccine as a booster shot or a different platform vaccine. So they are not using the Covishield for booster shot. And now that is a challenge for India. India has only those vaccines, two vaccines, Covishield and Covaxin. And there are no study available, at least not in public domain, to know whether a booster shot of Covaxin can be given after the Covishield primary immunization schedule, or booster shot of Covishield can be given after Covaxin primary immunization schedule. So that's another challenge for India, and probably I'm sure either some study would have been started or would be started to understand that how to optimize this approach. But the current evidence indicate that preferred approach would be to give a different vaccine as a booster shot.
Dr. Rath, would you like to add to it?
I don't think there's anything very much more to add. Biologically speaking, I will simply add the footnote that different vaccine platforms may give different results in these mix and match combinations. And in fact, for example, the more the relatively recent Lancet report from the UK COV Boost study group does make that point, where as Dr. Lehria pointed out, there is enhancement in the so-called heterologous groups, meaning mix and match groups. But there are differences in those levels. And there is, at least to my memory, one vaccine in that study which somewhat unexpectedly does not give any dramatic boosting effect. So a lot of this also depends on platforms. And in along those lines, let me underline the point that the mRNA platforms are platforms where what is being given to people is purely the viral protein, or more correctly, viral protein information. Whereas in the adenoviral vector vaccines, what is being given is adenoviral proteins plus SARS-CoV-2 proteins, the COVID virus proteins. So immune responses, therefore, can take quite different trajectories, and that has its own potential influence and consequences for responses to boosters. So this really needs a great deal of careful, well-designed studies before we can come up with any hard and fast recommendations. And the final point is, this also varies over time. The studies that I'm aware of with what I'm calling third dose, because I agree with Dr. Lehria's characterization that a booster is something that in formal terms one only talks about at least 6 months after primary vaccination schedule. And it's not clear to me that I have seen any really good evidence of six-month gap boosting. The COV Boost studies, for example, use, I think, between 10 to 12 weeks for the third dose of heterologous boosters. So there are a lot of variables and a lot of unknowns in these studies. And drawing quick, easy, facile conclusions and making a booster policy would, I think, be premature at this point.
And concerning the vaccine availability, can we go about, even if we decide for a booster, should they not consider the vaccine stock both to vaccinate people with first and second dose before even deciding for a booster dose? And especially in the case of Covaxin, the availability is far less compared to Covishield. And supposing if the decision is to boost with a different vaccine, the majority of the people have been vaccinated with Covishield. So will we have that stock of Covaxin to vaccinate such people with a boost, with a booster dose? Dr. Rath?
Well, both Dr. Larry and I have been addressing this issue from the very first question, that the primary commitment, the major priority in both our views, as far as I can tell, is the basic universal inclusive COVID vaccination program. And therefore, certainly it should take priority. The additional points that Dr. Lehria pointed out about how are we going to configure supplies of different vaccines, about tracking people, about ensuring when they get a booster, if at all they are to get a booster, which booster they get, is that booster available in that amount at that time in that place or not? These are going to become more and more and more logistically complex problems as well. But I still think that we need to stop pretending that we can trade off laxity in the primary vaccination campaign in favor of booster doses. Neither ground realities nor the evidence support doing that at all.
I would like to go nuanced approach on this, that first of all, I don't foresee that the way some countries are giving booster dose for entire population, adult population, India should be doing that approach. India should not be doing that approach. That's what I mean. That's one. Second thing is that we need to remember that like most likely the elderly population or population with comorbidity in 45 to 59 might require some section of them, some subgroup of them might require booster shot, but it need, India need to follow a more nuanced approach. For example, we broadly understand, but we need to know a little more whether people who develop past infection, COVID-19 infection in the past, do they really need booster? And that kind of nuanced approach, can they be excluded from booster no matter which age group? Similarly, if health workers who are continuously working, which health worker should be given booster? So what my point is that in India, the booster dose might not be recommended for all the adult population. It will be a small subsection of population, that's one. And having given that consideration, India has achieved far more vaccine production than requirement. So for me, I don't foresee that there would be shortage of vaccines. But of course, before rolling out boosters, it should be ensured that there would be sufficient and sustained vaccine supply for a primary immunization schedule. But I don't foresee that as and when booster is started, it would affect the vaccine supply. I also think that it should be, whenever it is started, it should be in a staggered manner for a targeted population, and India would have sufficient supply for that. But I want to be cautious that merely because India would have sufficient vaccine production, we should not be jumping into a booster shot administration. It should be an independent scientific decision.
Finally, reiterating the same point that Dr. Rath earlier mentioned, should the focus not be on primary vaccination of the global community, especially in Africa, where people, very small percentage of people have been vaccinated? Should India not be focused on distributing the vaccines globally than on deciding on booster doses when there's no evidence on any front right now? Dr. Rath?
Well, my short answer to that is, as I said in the beginning of this conversation, that the focus needs to be on global, inclusive, primary COVID-19 vaccination campaigns. And that conversations about boosters remains both unconnected to that primary purpose for reducing hospitalizations and deaths, as Dr. Leria pointed out, and to a significant extent, thin on evidence. And therefore, I don't see those as in any way ambiguous. Of course, the focus needs to be on primary vaccination campaigns.
Dr. Leria?
Yes, that's exactly the point. So there is enough evidence to say that primary immunizations prevent from severe disease, hospitalization, and death. And that should be the core purpose, no matter which part of the world people are living. So ensuring vaccine availability for different parts of the world should be priority of all the countries, be it India, United Kingdom, United States, all the countries. And that's what countries should be doing. Of course, we do understand that in a pandemic period, countries want to prioritize their own population first, or in a right balance, prioritize your own population and then share vaccines. I believe that India has achieved that status where it can assure the primary immunization for its adult population, and it has more vaccines. So India's priority should be revive the Vaccine Maitri initiative in an accelerated and sustained manner. Especially, this becomes very important as we are seeing that new variants are emerging from, most likely from settings where there is low vaccination coverage. Even if they are not emerging from those settings, the impact of new variants would be far worse on those settings which are low vaccination coverage. So therefore, if the world want to ensure protection or halt the pandemic, it need to ensure that it vaccinate its own population, but also share vaccine with the rest of the world. So there is no doubt that India and other countries should share vaccine with other settings which do not have vaccine supply before booster is considered before more evidence on booster emerge. And even when evidence on booster emerge, there is a far greater evidence on the benefit of primary immunization, and that points to share the vaccine. India should definitely share the vaccines, and now is the time.
Thank you so much. Thank you both Dr. Rath and Dr. Lagria for this fantastic discussion. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you.